It's about a habit of mind, a discipline of mind, and a discipline of heart too, because this isn't coming out of your mind. It's coming out of your heart with an open heart to send these intentions out to other people, to the world. But there is all of that. And the oneness factor, we actually measured. I worked with a team of neuroscientists, and we put EEG caps on one member of each of a group of batches of groups of student volunteers. So they were put in Power of Eight groups. Most of them had never even meditated before. Put an EEG cap on them, and we found very quickly the parts of the brain that make us feel separate, like the parietal lobes, which sit right back here. They help us navigate through space. They tell us, this is me, this is not me. They were turned way down. And so were parts of the right frontal lobes that are involved in worry, doubt, negativity. They were also dialed way down.
Welcome to Do It With Dan,
entrepreneurial philanthropist, public speaker and author, creator of the Beyond Intention Paradigm. Here is your host, Daniel Mangena.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the podcast. It's me, your host, Dan Mangena. Very excited to introduce today's guest. We had some fandangling to do to get here, but we're here now. I'm really excited for the conversation we're going to have on magic, intentionality, quantum entanglement, science and mysticalness, and maybe yellow flowers. Who knows? All I know is that my guest is someone whose work I felt the power of in my own life. We apply it into the work that we do at Dreamer HQ. We're very, very big on group intentionality. It's a big part of what we do. So really excited to have this conversation today. So without further ado, Lynn, do you want to let the people know who you are and in your own words, what it is you do?
Okay, I'm Lynn McTaggart. I am an internationally best-selling author. I've written 7 books, 4 of which have been on the new science and intention. I also run a thing called the Intention Experiment, which put intention to a test involving thousands of people around the world and with scientific experiments run by prestigious scientists in a variety of universities. And I am the architect of the Power of Eight, which is small group intention, and have been doing both since about 2007.
Brilliant. Well, I'm all about intention. The listeners will know intentionality is something that I'm very, very, very passionate about. And I found intentionality to be a missing piece for a lot of people in terms of their journey to bringing forth outcomes that they really want to see in their life. But over the years that you've been playing the game of intention and really starting to bring a tangible, trackable, measurable level of insight into what we're doing with intentions, what are some of the top things that you've seen have stopped people's intentions becoming a part of the life that they want to live?
Oh, well, number one, self-sabotage. Most of us think that intention is that little power thought we have in the morning when we're doing our meditation. We send it out, and that's the only thing the universe hears. But the science shows us we're all leaky buckets, as I like to say. We are sending out intention with every thought we have, and we've got about 70,000 of them every day. And if you stop and notice, you know, about 80% of those are negative, judgmental, undermining, usually self-undermining, self-sabotaging. And so they're the intentions we send out to the world. Every last judgment we hold, every last bit of flotsam and jetsam, all of those mendacious thoughts that we carry with us every single day, they become an intention and they become our life's intention.
So it seems then that just doing my morning rampage and the right amount of yoga before I start my day isn't going to be the only thing that's going to bring about the life that I want to live. I maybe have to carry some consistency into my day. Am I hearing you correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's no good just having that one power thought. You have to be conscious of what you're beaming out to the universe all the time. I mean, just to look at the science, the late brilliant physicist, Fritz Albert Popp, a German physicist, discovered many decades ago, he discovered that all living things, including human beings, are sending out a tiny current of light from the DNA of every cell. And that this light is not only a global phenomena in the body that enables us to have communication between cells. It's like a grand orchestra leader. But also the light is going out of our bodies and it is being replied to synchronicitously with other people and other living things. It's like we're having a light conversation. If we were to track our light emissions, yours and mine, our light emissions would be also essentially tracking a conversation of sorts. Now, scientific studies have looked at this light. Dr. Gary Schwartz of the University of Arizona took up this mantle and used a special piece of equipment that could not only photograph the light photon by photon, but also measure it, count them. And he found that when a healer was sending out intention, that light increased enormously. So we know that these light emissions, these quantum light emissions, may have something to do with intention. But the point is, they're going outside our body and affecting other people and things.
So first and foremost, yummy. secondly, what's coming to mind is, I've always had this imagery that I've always used when I'm doing workshops and stuff like that, that essentially we've got the infinite possibilities that exist in front of us. And there's a carousel of infinite possibilities that becomes the next step, that the next frame that we step into that becomes the life that we live. But who we are is what's magnetically calling in and choosing that next step. What I hear from you is there is actually a trackable, measurable thing emitting from us that's actually becoming that calling card for what that next step in the dance is going to be of the life that we're living. Am I kind of tracking you correctly?
Well, we can't necessarily measure it to that extent, like saying, okay, if this light is this, that means we're meant to be a doctor, you know, that kind of thing.
I understand.
Yeah. But there's no question that we are creators. The Nobel Prize for Physics went to three physicists last year who have been working on a weird and wacky thing called non-locality for many years. And that is, in quantum physics, the phenomenon that once subatomic particles are in contact, no matter how far you separate them, if you put one in Australia and the other in the middle of New York, they will always continue to know about each other and influence each other. And we know that that is true. We know that what makes subatomic particles, which aren't an actual something, only a potential of something, we know what makes them real is the involvement of an observer. So we know from the subatomic world that we're creating our world. So there's no question that we are creators. And the big question is, do you want to allow the world to just buffet you around, or do you want to consciously step into that and be a creator of your own life?
And is that where the intentionality comes in?
And that's totally where intention comes in. And, you know, I've seen the power of long distance intention firsthand. First of all, I run many courses online, master classes, year-long master classes, where I put people in virtual groups and we work with them for a whole year. And we find that all of these groups never meet actually in person, but the group intention experience is affecting the members of the group. We've had thousands of healings. And I also do, as I mentioned, intention experiments, where I work with scientists to set up credible experiments to test the power of intention. And one of the best illustrations of non-locality or spooky action at a distance was one of my experiments. I was speaking in front of an audience in Sydney, Australia. This was 2007. And I had worked with the University of Arizona and the Consciousness Laboratory there to set up a really cool experiment. We wanted to see if we could make seeds grow faster. So we had four sets of seeds. The scientists had them in little trays. They photographed all four sets, sent me the photographs. I put them in front of the audience and said, pick one. We picked one. We didn't tell the scientists which one. They were labeled A, B, C, D. We did our intention. I told the scientists, we're done now. Didn't tell them which ones we did. They planted the seeds, measured them 5 days later. And lo and behold, at that point, I unblinded the study and said, oh, seeds D, or whatever it was. And yes, the seeds that had been sent intention grew significantly higher than the controls. So let's just unpack this one. And by the way, we ran it five more times, every single time, at different locations with different type of audience, same outcome. But let's unpack it for a minute. I was in Sydney, Australia with the audience. The seeds were in Tucson, Arizona, 8,000 miles away. And we weren't actually sending intention to the seeds. We were sending intention to a photograph of the seeds, a symbolic representation of the seeds, yet we had an effect. So that sure is spooky action at a distance, as Einstein once called it. It's a psychic internet, as I like to say.
This reminds me of a lot of the ideas that you covered in the field, this connectivity between all of us, this web of energy of which we're all a part of and expressing in. And I can't help but come back to this idea of how then our limiting or disempowering, I don't like to call them negative, but disempowering beliefs can have exactly the same impact on what we're creating. Is that the case, or is there some kind of filter that decides whether an empowering or disempowering belief is going to have the same effect?
No, there's no question that if we are self-sabotaging, remember, self-sabotage is made up of beliefs, and beliefs are thoughts. Mm. And thoughts are, I'm not good enough, I'm not ready for this, I can't do this, it's too hard, nobody loves me, all of those negative thoughts. Or the thoughts we carry with us from past events that color our world, these are all self-sabotaging thoughts that override any attempt at intention. They're the intentions, essentially. So one of the things I do is, work on, I have whole courses in working on people getting over self-sabotage.
So the light that we're emitting, I think you said it was Professor
P-O-P-P.
That light is almost a call sign for what we're going to be calling in. And that light's emitting from all of us. And we can expect to see, even though we're not at a point where we can measure what that light is and what it's going to be connecting to, but we could expect to see that there is some correlation between what we're emitting and what we're experiencing. And ultimately, regardless of the quality of those thoughts, it's going to lead to a defined outcome. Am I tracking correctly here? I really want to make sure I get this right.
Yeah. If you want to think about it, in a very simple way, what we think about, what we think about, we create. I am, therefore I create. And what you think about most of the time is what you create. It's like that wonderful story of, I think it's a Buddhist sitting by the side of a road, and a guy comes up to him and says, oh, I'm moving to the next town. What are the people like? And the guy says, well, what were they like in the last town? And he said, oh, they were terrible. And the Buddha said, well, they're going to be terrible at the next town. And somebody else came along and said, I'm moving to the next town. What are the people like? And he said, what were they like in the last town? And this person said, they were fabulous. And the Buddha says, well, they're fabulous at this town. It's what we think we create. We create the hell that is our world, essentially. You know, now I'm not saying we create earthquakes and disasters and that, you know, children are responsible for starvation. But mm-hmm. for us in our day-to-day grown-up world, yeah, we're mm-hmm. creating essentially the hell or the heaven we're living in.
Mm-hmm. We could almost say our immediate personal environment as adult, fully functioning, conscious beings is flowing from what we're thinking on a consistent basis.
Pretty much, yes. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm responsible if I walk out of my house tonight and I get run over by a truck. Mm-hmm. You know, there are other factors, other intenders, other things like that. We're all mixing together on this planet. But a lot of the way my life goes, has to do with my thinking, my intending, my unconscious intending, if I don't become conscious.
So that we could say then that essentially our immediate environment is within our realm of control. So I can't say whether or not I'm going to be knocked down by a truck, but how I deal with the experience of being knocked down by a truck is well within my realm of control. And where I go on from the experience of the truck also is within my realm of control, even though there are other factors at play that make up the entire symphony of our reality. The way that we move through that play, we do have a role in.
Absolutely. And let's also take illness, for instance, okay? Mm-hmm. We know that the placebo effect works 60 to 70% of the time. And one really fascinating study looked at the difference between one delivery of information about health versus another by health professionals. So they took doctors with some patients given placebos. And the first set of doctors said, I don't know if this is going to work. We'll give it a shot, but, you know, we'll do our best, but I'm not sure. And the other one with the other group had a group of doctors saying, this is going to really help you. This is going to be fabulous. We'll get you better. Don't worry. There was a 61% difference between the outcomes of the two. Remember, everybody was taking a sugar pill, but it was all about their thinking, their response to the positive or negative message or iffy message that was delivered to them. It's all about thoughts and words. So we have that kind of effect. So again, as you say, we could get hit by a truck, but it's all about our response, which will affect our intention, will affect our healing, our rate of healing. It'll affect whether we do heal. It'll affect our life afterward, whether impaired or not. So all of that is critical. And if you apply that to every area of your life, not just health, but career, finances, relationships, life purpose, it's all about thoughts and words.
There's something really refreshing that kind of washes over me when that happens. But then I still come back to, but if I've spent a lifetime building up thoughts and words and programming and habituation of thought and speaking that's disempowering, then doesn't that mean that all that power is going into creating a disempowering reality? And what can I do about it today? Let's say somebody, the person who's listening to this episode, is listening because they know or they believe and they accept this power, but they don't know what to do with all of the self-sabotaging thoughts and self-talk that they've been doing for their life.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of it has to do with some sort of trauma they suffered as a child. Now, it could be very simple. It could be they were in their class and they were humiliated because their teacher, at the age of 7 or 8, their teacher put a list of kids who understood how to do arithmetic up on the board, and their name was at the bottom of the list, and they were made to stand up and hold their head in shame. And that may have convinced them that they can't do math. Those kinds of things people need to address. Now, I work with people to help them use intention to get over those past traumas. And I work with people to use intention in the present as well, to deal with the self-sabotaging thoughts that we all have that are the little voice inside us that says, I can't. So, of course, people have to overcome that. But one of the things that I find that is an instant remedy is the power of a small group. When people do intention in groups, there's something so powerful about having a group of essentially strangers send healing to you that is life-affirming, empowering. It's an experience of, you know, of love most people don't have. One of my students, Jerry, said he joined a year-long group in 2020, and he loved it so much, he joined a second class of mine with another group. And he said, I now know what love is. When it's coming over the airwaves, I've done better in COVID than I've ever done in any point of my life. And I've seen so many people who were unable to speak up for themselves. So many people who didn't feel they had a voice or a right to a voice suddenly be heard in a power of eight group. And it's been life transforming for them too. I've seen so many people who never believed they'd get better or they could have a relationship or open their hearts to love or have enough money, et cetera, et cetera, suddenly create that within a group. And part of the key here is getting off of yourself. When people are stuck, I invariably say to them, get off of yourself. Stop intending for yourself. Intend for somebody in the group who needs it more than you. And invariably, the sender's life improves, not because of the feel-good effect of altruism. That's truly it, too. But because we know also the science of altruism shows altruism is like a bulletproof vest. People who do things for other people live longer, happier, healthier lives. No question. But there is a strange mirror effect that I have found with my intention experiments and also with power of eight groups. People who are the senders invariably have their lives healed, their lives improved, their intention manifest when they've got off of themselves. I'll give you a wonderful example. Andy Spiros. Andy was a young woman going through a divorce with two young children, and she needed a new job. She needed work. She had sold her gift store. She needed something new. She was very talented, experienced coach, experienced marketer, and couldn't get a job. Month after month after month, her power of eight group intending for nothing. We tried a bunch of things, and I finally just said, Andy, get off of yourself. Start intending for Luke, who was a young boy who tried to commit suicide. And I'd had all of the groups do an intention for Luke over successive weeks. Andy did this. By the way, Luke got out of the hospital in record time. They thought he wasn't even going to live. He'd broken every bone in his body. He'd had nerve damage, brain damage. He'd thrown himself off of a 40-foot structure onto hard ground after breaking up with his first serious girlfriend. He was only 15. Anyway, he got out of the hospital in record time. He's an absolutely healthy young adult now. But the interesting thing is what happened to Andy. Andy does this, intends for Luke, and the very next week, she gets a call from somebody she doesn't even know, out of nowhere, offering her her dream job. I have seen this happen over and over and over again. Getting off of yourself really, really does work.
This actually tracks with something in Vadim Zeland's work. I don't know if you've ever heard of Vadim Zeland. He's a Russian modern mystic. He wrote a book called Reality Transurfing and a couple of other books around this. This just the whole approach to reality. But one of the concepts that Vadim talks about is the mirror principle. And he says that reality is a mirror and we're always getting back from reality what we're putting out. So if we actually want something for ourselves, it is actually best to do your best to support other people getting it, and it will always come back to you. Everything that you want is going to come back when you're helping other people get what they want too.
Absolutely. Now, what I tend to tell my people is don't do it with a selfish heart. And that's one of the great things about a Power of Eight group. 7/8 of the time, you're intending for someone else. It rolls around and it's your turn too. And what ends up happening when people are meeting week after week after week is a sense of just a natural sense of love and altruism for the members of the group. You get closer and closer and closer. I have so many groups that have met for years now, and they wouldn't be without that 1 week meeting, one time a week meeting. But it is about really getting off of yourself. That is where miracles happen. And I've seen it with the intention experiments too. That's been even more remarkable in some ways, because it was totally unexpected. In 2008, when I did my first peace intention experiment, where I had my community around the world do an intention over 8 days to end the war in Sri Lanka, lower violence in Sri Lanka.
I remember reading that about that in your book, actually, yes.
Well, I didn't expect anything to happen, and a really weird thing happened with that experiment. Over that 8 days, it turned out that those were the very days that the government won some decisive battles that turned around the entire course of this intractable 25-year war. And within about 6 months, with 3 months, they'd overtaken the rebels who had choked off the entire north of the country. And a few months after that, this war was over. So, you know, big question, did we do this? But even the scientists we were working with, University of California's Dr. Jessica Utz, who is a noted professor of statistics, said she was really surprised. She saw lowering of violence right after our week of intention. But what was really shocking was that it turned out to be a very important, decisive, probably the most decisive week of all of those 25 years in changing the course of the war. You know, did we do this? It could have been coincidence, it could have been precognition, and maybe it was intention. But the really interesting part of it, even more interesting, was what happened to the participants. Because I survey people, I started doing it in that experiment in 2008. I survey the participants, basically say, how was it for you? And I was shocked to get all kinds of answers back with them saying, that their own lives had become more peaceful. They were getting along better with their estranged partners. They were getting along better with their bosses and coworkers. But overwhelmingly, about 40 to 50% said they feel more love for everyone they come in contact with. So that was bizarre to me. Their lives were becoming more peaceful. They were hugging strangers. But then I also saw that they were getting healed. Typically, about a third of our participants in every intention experiment register either vast improvements in health conditions they have or complete cures. And that to me was bizarre and unexplainable. But it has something to do, a huge thing to do with group intention, altruism, and that power of oneness, of coming together and creating oneness. That is, I think, the big secret sauce here.
And that oneness in my mind, links up with the whole idea of healing those things that are leading to those habituations of thought. Almost looking at that oneness as a directive to think of others, knowing that you're tied into that oneness anyway. And another thing that you've mentioned today that really, really has stuck with me is the idea of consistency. Not just thinking of oneness and thinking of other people for 5 minutes in the morning and then spending the rest of the day thinking about myself selfishly or being in disempowering thinking, but consistently taking these approaches to what's going on around us and applying it in order to see our intentions become a part of the life that we're living.
Absolutely. It is about consistency. It's about a habit of mind, a discipline of mind, and a discipline of heart too, because this isn't coming out of your mind. It's coming out of your heart with an open heart to send these intentions out to other people, to the world. But there is all of that. And the oneness factor, we actually measured. I worked with a team of neuroscientists, and we put EEG caps on one member of each of a group of batches of groups of student volunteers. So they were put in power of eight groups. Most of them had never even meditated before. Put an EEG cap on them, and we found very quickly the parts of the brain that make us feel separate, like the parietal lobes, which sit right back here. They help us navigate through space. They tell us, this is me, this is not me. They were turned way down. And so were parts of the right frontal lobes that are involved in worry, doubt, negativity. They were also dialed way down. So what we expected, and Dr. Stephanie Sullivan, who is the neuroscientist who ran the experiment, we all expected, she expected, that we were going to see brainwave signatures almost identical to meditation ones, those of meditation, and there have been many studies of it. They were nothing like meditation. It was unbelievable. It was really bizarre. What they were almost identical to were the brainwave signatures recorded by Dr. Andrew Newberg, a neuroscientist then at the University of Pennsylvania, who had done studies of Sufi masters chanting and Buddhist monks during ecstatic prayer. And they had identical situations, identical brainwave signatures. So what I was recording was people in a state of ecstatic oneness. And I think that is the place where miracles happen. Where we don't get to feel that. You know, we talk about, I've talked about, we're all in the field, but we don't experience life like that. We experience life as a desolate sense of separation. We experience life as, this is me, this is not me. And here we have suddenly people transported into a state of ecstatic oneness. So, and what was amazing about our study too is, as I say, our student volunteers were total novices. And yet, with some simple explanations of what to do, they were fast-tracked into the miraculous.
Lynn, I just want to take a moment just to thank you, because I think one of the most powerful things that makes, so I've got Asperger's, so my brain thinks in ones and zeros. It's very, very structured. And my journey into spirituality, the spiritual side of spirituality, probably began about 2016, even though the esoteric side of things and the mental projection side of things and the visualization I've been doing for 20 years, but actually coming to the more purely spiritual side of things happened, as I said, around 2015, 2016. And your work and the fact that it did have that substantive, recordingly, scientifically, no BS approach actually really gave me a solid grounding to be able to look more deeply into the spiritual and be able to accept it, because my brain just didn't get the kind of airy-fairy, fluffy, rainbow cakes approach that so many people have had, and that I found from my own observation has actually stopped people accessing the magic, because we think that I'm going to think my happy thoughts and it's going to be okay. And we lose sight of the discipline, right? We lose sight of the consistency. We lose sight of the fact that there is a work involved in doing it this way, but the payoff is higher doing it this way. So I just really want to thank you, because I know that in conversations I've been having with people, I know in the documentaries that me and the team are working on, we're really taking this approach too, of bringing the hardcore science into it, because this is truth and it will always stand up to the light of investigation and interrogation, but we have to be ready to do that. So I just wanted to thank you for that personally from the bottom of my heart, because you really are doing a great work and it's changed my life, and I know it's changed so many other people's lives too.
Thank you so much. I know Western mind really needs proof. We all need proof. Mm. And I hear this over and over again, that people didn't believe it. until they actually saw there was this wealth of scientific evidence there for the taking. In fact, there was a new science there that was unfolding, and that's the thing that brought me in. I was researching it, just wanting to find out why homeopathy worked and why spiritual healing worked. And I kept thinking to myself, this is in the 1990s. How can you take a thought and send it to someone else and make them better? That in itself undermines everything we think about how the world works. And so that really, that investigation was, you know, I wanted to find out why. And that became my book, The Field. And that book changed the messenger, because I suddenly went, whoa, I wasn't just finding out why spiritual healing worked. I had trespassed into a new science in the making, and a completely new view of our world and us within it. So that, and all the subsequent books have been attempts to say, okay, so what does this mean? Like the intention experiment, the book and the experiment itself was, okay, so if thoughts are things that affect other things, how far can we take this? What are we talking about? Are we talking about a tiny, subtle effect? Or are we talking about curing cancer with our thoughts? And so that has been an attempt to examine that and so forth. And The Power of Eight, which came about by accident, was an attempt to understand what on earth is going on here. Because with my first Power of Eight group, I thought people were going to feel nice and relaxed, a bit like getting your back massaged. And all of a sudden, we're getting these major healings. You know, in the first time we did it in Chicago in 2008, I was just trying to figure out how to shrink down the intention experiments to a workshop. And I was kicking around with my husband, and I said, I don't know, maybe I'll put people in groups of eight or so, and I'll have them send intention to somebody in the group with a health challenge. And my husband's a great headline writer, and he said, I love it, The Power of Eight. And that is literally how we started.
That's where it came from.
And we did, thinking, again, it's going to be a little bit like getting a facial or getting your back massaged. And we had people do it to someone with a health challenge, groups of eight. And the next day, had them come back and said, hey, anybody have anything to report? Figuring they're going to say, oh, that was nice and relaxing, like getting my back massaged. That's not what they said. What they said was things like, well, I have arthritis and I limped, and we noticed her limping the day before, and I'm walking in normally today. And somebody else said, I have terrible IBS and my gut's normal today. And somebody else, I have depression and it feels like it's lifted. And somebody else, I have cataracts and they're about 80% better. So we went, whoa. And it also upset me, actually, because I thought, well, I'm a researcher. I don't do healing. I'm not that. And so this is why it took me 10 years to publish The Power of Eight, because I was frightened by it. I had run thousands of groups by then, constantly studying what's going on here. Why is this working? Documenting it, looking at the intention experiments. Why are people having these mirror effects to this extent? So I needed to understand it in order to release it to the world. And I also felt a great responsibility. I mean, this shouldn't get into the wrong hands. So, but it was to try to understand why this works. Why does group intention become so powerful and magnify what happens in individual intention?
Well, thank you for coming out of the intentional closet, the Power of Eight closet. And again, thank you for just going on this journey and allowing us to have the sweet tea that's resulted from the work that you've been doing. And I just think it's so funny when someone doesn't even go out, you weren't going out this way, I'm going to be like a super healer and I'm going to like change the world. Like, I'm just going to just try and understand some stuff and see what happens. And, you know, life-changing things, world-changing things can come from the most unexpected places. And here's just one of those instances, I think.
Absolutely. And now what I've been doing lately is calling it in. So I realize I've got tens of thousands of groups out there, and I guess we can all agree things are not working very well in the world at the moment. And so I've been muttering to myself, I need an army of change makers. And I suddenly realized I've got an army of change makers. And they're out there. So we have started a thing called the 8 Revolution, which is bringing all the groups together and me giving them tools to start using intention, not just for healing within the group, but healing their communities, doing things in a different way, and learning from the ground up that they can make major change, because every major movement started with a small group. Gandhi started it. Martin Luther King started it that way. The Prague uprising that ended up ending communism in Czechoslovakia without a shot being fired was all about small groups. Small groups just saying, well, we're going to do something different. And so that's what we're doing at the moment, is just showing that intention can work in communities. It can work to make big, big changes, not only in individuals' lives, but in the world.
Amazing, amazing. Lynn, you've got groups, you've got virtual things, you've got books, you've got magic going on in the world. Where's the best place for people to find out about that? And what's something that's really exciting now that maybe they should pay some closer attention to?
Thank you so much for asking. They can find me at lynnmctaggart.com. That's Lynn with an E, and McTaggart is A-R-T. And I've got courses going on all the time. I run everything from Intention Essentials to a year-long course called the Intention Masterclass. I've got an exciting retreat that we're holding in September. It's in a country house estate. It was the runner-up for the location for shooting Downton Abbey. So it's in Yorkshire in the UK, and it's 3,000 acres of amazing places and a very spiritually minded owner. So it's a fabulous place where people can actually stay in this 15th century stately home. So we're running that with Heal Your Past workshops. I've got our 8 Revolution going on. So people just need to join lynnmctaggart.com. You'll get all the details, and all of those tools for a new world are free for anybody who joins. I want that movement to be completely free. So I have podcasts, I have blogs, and I have all kinds of tools for people at any stage of their journey.
Amazing. We'll make sure we pop some links in the show notes. Guys, I want to see all of you hopping on the revolution. You know, we're all about intentionality here. And when it comes to intention, there's nobody whose work that I give more credibility to, that I give more attention to, than Lynn. She's crunched the numbers. She's been under, if you read any of her books and see the level of stringent, like, we're going to make sure we keep all of the, you can't look at it and not know that real thought has gone into making sure that these numbers really stack up. An incredible human, as I'm sure you now agree, and is doing some great work as well. So go ahead, head over to Lynn with an E, McTaggart, A-R-T. We'll pop a link in the show notes. Get signed up, get tuned in, and get adding to this revolution, which I believe is really going to change the world. Any final words from you, Lynn, before we wrap up today?
Well, all I want to say is to believe in your own power. I mean, you're far more powerful than you've understood. We have been born with an extraordinary power to heal each other, to heal ourselves, to heal the world. But that power has been denied us by authority figures to the point where we don't believe it anymore. So this is a message of hope to reclaim your power. All it really does take is one thought to change the world.
Amazing, amazing. Well, guys, you heard it here first. As we always say, dream with your eyes open. Remember, you can consciously and intentionally choose a more abundant, joyful, purpose-driven life. some of the tips, tools and strategies to be able to do that presented today. Make sure you head over to Lynn's website to get more and share this episode with someone who you believe could do with a little bit more positive intention in their life. Until next time, bye for now.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Do It With Dan with your host, Daniel McGenna. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit dmpotv.com. We'll catch you on the next episode of Do It With Dan.